I'm thrilled that today's guest, an old friend of mine, Bobby Flay, probably the most well-known chef in the world, man about town. He's got a relatively new book out, co-author Sundays with Sophie, Family Recipes for Any Day of the Week. And his new series just broke on Food Network, his 27th year. Bobby's Triple Threat airs Tuesdays at 9 p.m. It's his, I think, 17th series on Food Network. He's written over a dozen books. He's won Daytime Emmys. He is a man of the people. Bobby Flay, thanks for being here, man.
Thank you so much. I love that intro.
Well, it's true. You know what? It's an intro that writes itself. First of all, before we get into anything else, tell me about the new show.
So the new show is called Bobby's Triple Threat. And the premise is that I've handpicked three chefs, three up-and-coming chefs. They all have a lot of accolades already, but I'm trying to bring them into the mainstream of the world. So I've handpicked three chefs, Michael Voltaggio from Los Angeles, Brooke Williamson from Southern California, and a woman named Tiffany Derry from Dallas. And they're sort of my house chefs. I have this speakeasy in a secret location in New York with kitchens, of course. And then I play basically the matchmaker. I welcome you to my club. It's one chef that comes in. They take on all three of these chefs. And if they can beat them cumulatively, you know, whoever has the most points at the end of the night, they win $25,000. It's that simple. Hard to do, but we've shot six episodes so far. And I will tell you this, they don't win them all. So it's been really great.
I've had the honor of being on one of your shows, Beat Bobby Flay. How did you, if you said to me, okay, come up with 17 different shows, same chef, same celebrity chef, who do you come up with the ideas? I'm a creative guy, but I would run out of juice, no pun intended, after about six or seven.
I come up with most of the shows that I do. Definitely all the shows that I do now I come up with, because those are the ones that work. I mean, you know about this. I mean, when you do something that you're passionate about, as opposed to, you know, somebody trying to fit you into a format that they think that you might work in, there's a difference. And, you know, I come up with my shows. I had a show called Throwdown about 10 years ago. And a lot of times I get inspired by other shows on TV that are not cooking shows. So you remember Ashton did that show Punked many years ago?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
I mean, it was a great concept. It was a simple concept. And basically Throwdown was, you know, inspired by Punked. The movie Color of Money, the remake, you know, it's been a long time. I mean, you think it's like 10 years. It's like 20 years ago. And that movie was the inspiration for Bobby's Triple Threat. You know, it was a guy that had basically, you know, sort of made his bones in the pool halls all around America, you know, making his living. He had done what he had done, but he noticed this young talent, but he wanted to mentor him. And basically that's what Triple Threat is. You know, and I created this really kind of cool speakeasy kind of feel to it. We're not playing pool, we're cooking, but it's the same, you know, that's sort of where I get the ideas. I get inspired by other things that I watch besides cooking shows. Because a lot of times what happens is in every genre, something becomes a hit and then everybody decides to do a version of that hit and it never is as good. So I'm always looking to change the game a little bit. I'm always looking to pull from someplace else to create something new in my genre.
Interesting. We're going to talk about the book and a show coming up with your daughter, Sophie. But let's go back to the beginning. I love the fact that you were at age eight, while most of us were asking for G.I. Joes and things and Stratego and Stratomatic baseball. Big, tough Bobby Flay on the Upper East Side says, get me an Easy Bake Oven. I love this. Take me back.
First of all, as you can imagine, that's a long time ago. I'm 57. So it's, you know, it's basically almost 50 years ago now. And I was a New York City kid. And after school, I would come home and watch, you know, whatever was on television after school when I was a kid, you know, whether it was like Sesame Street or The Electric Company or whatever was going on at the time. And, you know, marketing, listen, you know as well as anyone else in the world, marketing works when it works. And I was watching these commercials from this oven, and I was so intrigued by the idea that you could bake a cake with a light bulb. So I said to my parents, I was like, I have to see this myself. That's what I want for Christmas. And so, listen, I also got the G.I. Joes and the baseball gloves and all that other stuff, but I also got the Easy Bake Oven. And, you know, lo and behold, it worked.
And so you get your first job at a Pizza Baskin Robbins place. How old were you when you did that?
Well, there's two. So there's two jobs. So
well, there's the Joe Allen. Which came first, the Joe Allen or the pizza?
Well, there's three stories. The first one is in. I was in my third or fourth Catholic school in grammar school at St. Ignatius Loyola on 84th Street. And in sixth grade, I started working at Mimi's Pizzeria on 84th Street after school. And they wouldn't let me do much. They'd let me deliver pizzas. But, you know, in terms of in the kitchen, I could open the cans of the tomatoes and I could grate the mozzarella for the pizzas. And that was basically as close as they let me get to the food. Then when I got a little older, I worked in Baskin Robbins. There was a Baskin Robbins a half a block from my house. So I worked there scooping ice cream. And to this day, ice cream is like basically my favorite thing to eat. I'm obsessed with it. And then going even further, when I dropped out of high school, I was, you know, 16 or 17 years old. I was in 10th grade. I dropped out of high school. I went to work at Joe Allen's, which, you know, if you live in New York, you know, at all, you know, Joe Allen's is a stalwart in terms of, you know, it's a Broadway district restaurant. I mean, it's been there for, I don't know how many years now, 60?
Yeah.
I mean, some crazy
it's
number.
It's an institution.
And so, but, you know, not Joe Allen's is not a place that's known for great cuisine, but it was a good, you know, American style restaurant. Everybody went there before and after theater. All the actors went there, et cetera. And so, but I just needed a job. And so I started out as a busboy for 2 weeks. And then, after 2 weeks, the chef asked me if I wanted a job in the kitchen. I was like, sure. I mean, honestly, Donnie, I had no sense that I wanted to cook for a living. But the thing that I realized, and you have to remember, like they were not testing kids for ADD at that point and on. I definitely had some sort of learning disability, no question about it. I couldn't retain, you know, what I was reading, et cetera. And so an English textbook was like the devil to me. It was not the way that I was going to learn. I didn't know that then. I just knew I needed to get out of school. And I basically wanted to go hang out with my friends because that was way more interesting than what I was doing in school.
Parents must have given you a hard time about this, dropping out in 10th grade.
Yeah, exactly. So, but then when I started cooking in the restaurant and learning how to use a knife and learning how to make dressings and salads, et cetera, I was just like, I remember literally waking up one morning, staring at the ceiling from my bed and thinking to myself, oh, I can't wait to go to work today. It was the first time that I was inspired to do anything like that.
Right. Wow.
And I needed to work with my hands. And this is something that I talk about all the time. We need a lot more vocational education
yes.
in this country because
yes, yes,
not
yes,
everybody
yes.
learns in a traditional way. I mean, you just I trust. I'm proof of that.
Yeah.
And so I started working in the restaurant, and then about a year and a half later, Joe Allen himself came up to me and said, you know, it's great that you work here, but you're not going to really learn anything else here. You need to go to school. And I was like, go to school? Like, I don't have that talent. I'm not going to be a really good chef. I mean, I like my job. I was just happy just doing that. And he said, you don't even know what you're talking about. Like you haven't even been able to expose yourself to figure out whether you're good at this or not. Like, it takes a long time to become a chef. He said, there's a brand new school opening up called the French Culinary Institute. This is 1984. Go down there and just check it out. Tell me what you think. Anyway, I went down there, checked it out, and I was like, you know what? I don't love the idea that it's school again, but maybe this will be better for me. So I enrolled in the school. There was 9 people in the first class. And on the first day of going to school, he handed me a check for my tuition.
Wow.
And he said, you don't owe me anything. I'm inspired to do this. Go do it.
Wow.
And you know, something obviously I'd never forgot. And it helps me think about paying it forward as well. I mean, it's a great life lesson. It's a great business lesson. Many times after I graduated and had some success, I would always say to Joe, what can I do to repay you? Is there anything I can do to put myself to work, you know, to help your restaurant out? Anything I can do. And he's like, I don't need anything from you. It's fine. And at some point he said to me, he just passed away a couple of years ago, but he said to me, about 3 or 4 years ago, he called me and he said, I have a favor to ask you. I said, great, finally. What is it? He said, stop telling this story. I'm so tired of telling the story because once you tell the story, all the journalists call me up and they want to hear my side of it. Please stop telling it. So that was my gift to him. I stopped telling the story finally.
So you had a few stops after you got out of school, and the big kind of break for you was Mesa Grill. How did that come about?
Well, Mesa Grill... yes, absolutely. Mesa Grill in New York City We had three of them. We had one in Vegas and one in the Bahamas. But the headquarters, basically, of my career was Mesa Grill on 15th and 5th. It was opened in 1991. I was 25 years old. A guy named Jerry Kretschmer, who was, is a real estate guy in New York City, built a lot of affordable housing. He actually ran for mayor, I think, in 1973 or something like that. He was the sanitation commissioner of New York at one point. He's just a total New York guy. He came up to me. He owned Gotham Bar and Grill at the time. And he came into this restaurant that I was cooking called Miracle Grill. And he said, I just took a trip. This is so crazy how things happen. I just took a trip with my wife to the southwest of the United States. And I'm a New Yorker, but I really want to be a cowboy. And everybody tells me that if I want to open a contemporary southwestern restaurant, that you're the guy to talk to. I said, okay, great. And so he came into the restaurant. He had dinner. And then about 2 weeks later, he called me to a meeting. And we decided to, put our partnership together. And, he basically said, look, I'm going to raise the money. You and I are going to do this together. We're going to design the restaurant together with the designer. You'll do the menu, obviously. And he said to me, he was a total New York guy. He goes, I'll get you the ink. Like, I'll make sure that you get the media that you want. And at the time, there was no internet, Donnie. It was, for restaurants, it was Gail Green for New York Magazine, and it was the New York Times. That was it. Nothing else. The Post would write some things here and there, but basically, that was basically what you had to worry about.
There was no other way to get to people back then. That was it.
That was it. And so, you needed, there was no Instagram. You couldn't just take pictures of your food and get people excited. The Times and New York Magazine had to write about it in a positive way, and then people would show up to your restaurant. Anyway, Mesa Grill opened, we were there for 26 years. It was an amazing run. It made my career, and it really shaped the way I was thought of in the business in terms of the way I cook, big flavors, spicy food, contemporary in a creative way. And, from there, that became, Mesa Grill was my foundation, my platform for everything else that happened after that.
Before we get to all the TV, there's a series on now, The Bear, which I'm sure you've obviously watched. Which is a different. It really is this very gritty, behind the scenes what goes on in the kitchen. How you watch it and you almost can't believe it. It's like Vietnam in a kitchen. Like I don't mean to in any ways. It just, how real is that? Because it's insanity. I'm just curious.
I mean, listen, I think they did a great job, bringing in the sense of reality. Obviously, it's fiction, but they did their research. Let's put it this way. And with all the grittiness that went down in that kitchen, the thing that I loved about it the most was that it was incredibly inspirational. There was a means to an end for everybody to really become better at what they do, to become more passionate about what they're doing every day for a living, as opposed to it just being a job. And I think that was the beauty of that show.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with the kitchen. It's just people going to work every day and being inspired, and just even if it's I open up cans, I'm going to be the fucking best person in the world.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly right.
So how did the TV thing all come about? I mean, you were kind of a pioneer. Right now, Food Network is an institution and cooking shows and food has become such a huge part of our culture. But you were kind of a tipping point. How did that all come about?
Right place, right time. They say timing is everything. It's most things. You have to capitalize on the timing. But Food Network started about 28, 29 years ago, something like that. And I remember the announcement. I was at Mesa Grill. Mesa Grill had been open for a few years, and we were sort of the hot restaurant in New York. And I remember thinking to myself, 24 hours of food, this is going to last a week. Like, what are they going to talk about? Clearly, I was wrong by about 28 years so far. And because I lived in New York City, and they were a brand new startup cable network that had no money, and they were in New York, I got called to be guests on a couple of their initial shows. Mm-hmm. And they weren't flying people in from Los Angeles to be on the Food Network. They had no money. It was a terrible studio, like on 39th Street and 11th Avenue. And like, if you couldn't get there by subway, you weren't on the network.
Right.
And I was a guest. And then after I had been a guest for a couple of the shows, I pitched a couple of different shows, and then a show called Grillin' and Chillin' was born out of that. It was my first show on the network. It was literally the worst television in the history of television. The worst.
Why?
It was so bad, it was good. It was like a train wreck that we weren't trying to make a train wreck. And we had no idea what we were doing. I mean, we were knuckleheads. I mean, it was me and this guy, Jack McDavid. We were outside at the back lot of the Home Shopping Network in Clearwater, Florida. We shot 42 episodes in 6 days.
Right.
Like, no, live to tape. They had no money for editing. So I learned how to do TV live to tape. Like, we'd have to hit the commercial breaks. It was actually an incredible learning experience.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why I can shoot TV so quickly today.
That's great. That's right. And Iron Chef was pretty much your kind of like mainstay. And why'd you stop doing it after 17 years or how many years you did it? Why'd you stop in 2018, I think?
Well, first of all, it was a great Iron Chef. I believe Iron Chef. Now, I'll just take you back about Iron Chef because there's a story there, which is that Iron Chef was a Fuji Television production. It was a Japanese production originally, of course. Mm-hmm. And they called Tim Zagat from the Zagat Guide,
sure,
and said, we want to come to New York and we want to put on a big giant special that we want to air in Japan, but we want to take on the quintessential American chef. So he said, Bobby Flay. So they called the Food Network. The Food Network called me and said, we got this call about Iron Chef. Now you have to remember, at the time, the Japanese version of Iron Chef, every chef in America was watching it on channel 462 at 3:30 in the morning. We couldn't believe what was going on.
Right.
Okay. We were the only ones watching it,
right,
but it was amazing. It was like a cult thing that was happening. So when I got the call, I was like, I'm definitely doing this no matter what. I mean, what an honor, what a great opportunity. And it was not a Food Network production at all. And so basically they lent me to them. And we did an episode in New York. I lost. The Food Network bought it and then it re-aired it in the United States. It was the biggest ratings they had had by 10 times. I mean, right, it brought them into pop culture.
That was it, yeah.
And then we did a rematch in Japan. They called me 3 months later and I beat him in Japan. And then the Food Network bought the rights for Iron Chef America. And they said, if you want to do this, we're going to do this. And I said, great. But I want to make sure that I'm able to pick the teams, et cetera. They're like, no problem. And I did it for so long. And I was begging them. I was like, please let me out of this. Because it is excruciatingly, like, exhausting. I mean, first of all, you're cooking 25 dishes an episode. You have to remember, you have to cook 5 dishes, but you have to make 5 of each one. So you're making 25 dishes in an hour. It's really exhausting. Every chef that comes in there wants to hit you with a baseball bat. I mean, it's just like, you know, I had had enough. I had done so many episodes. And so finally I said, I can't do this anymore. And that was the end of it.
Speaking of beginnings or continuations, you recently signed a new deal with Food Network. And there was a lot of talk about, obviously, with the streaming services, with Netflix and the Hulus of the world and everything. And rumors are it was about a $100 million deal. You want to give us some numbers?
Oh, no, I can't talk numbers. But listen, when people throw those numbers out there, it makes you feel like you're worth something.
Right.
I'm not going to talk numbers, obviously. But look, it was a negotiation. And it was a fair negotiation. And, at the time, you know, Discovery was in the middle of merging with Warner Brothers. Sure. They had a lot going on there. And it was one of those things. It's like when a baseball player goes for free agency, right?
Yeah.
You just don't get what you ask for. You know, there's back and forth. And then every once in a while, somebody takes a stronger position than you want them to take. But ultimately, it all got worked out. I talked to a bunch of other streaming services and networks and stuff like that. And it was really nice to see that people were really interested in what I had to offer. Ultimately, I stayed at Food Network happily. I mean, listen, I have a lot of history there. And, you know, it's basically shorthand. It's like anything else, you know, and I don't take that for granted. You never know if your viewership is going to basically, you know, stand up and walk with you if you walk away. You know, I've been there for so long. I've been there for 27, 28 years. you know, I've built a really nice foundation of viewership there. So just to kind of like walk away from that to try something else.
Well, it's also, I think it's the best of all worlds for you, where you now have, maybe it could be a CNN show or an HBO Max show. So, I mean, you stay in kind of linear TV, if you will, in cable television, but they're one of the four or five big players now. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Well, interesting. That's interesting you say that, because David Zaslav, who's the
Sure said the same thing to you in pitching you. Yeah, he said, yeah.
He's the prince of all this. You know, if you know who David Zaslav,
I'm sure, he's a friend of mine.
He's the chairman now of Warner. Right, he's the best. I love him.
Great guy.
And he said to me, he goes, "Listen, I mean, we're going to own it all. You know, we're going to have CNN. We're going to, you know," he goes, "we'll put you in a movie." And I thought to myself, yeah, I'm sure he's going to put me in a movie. Guess what? I'm in a movie.
What movie?
I'm doing a movie for, it's called One Delicious Christmas. It's going to come out for, you know, it's on Discovery Plus. It's a Christmas movie.
That's great.
And I don't even play myself, which I was like, that's risky on your part. Right. I'm not great. A good actor.
But that's great. But it
was a hard week of negotiation, but ultimately, you know, it all worked out.
It did. So talk to me about the book with your daughter. How old is Sophie now?
Sophie's 26. And Sophie, she lives in Los Angeles. She's a reporter on KTLA for ABC. So she's, you know, she's off on her own career. But one of the nice things is that they let her, do some stuff with me at Discovery. So like, you know, we have a show called Bobby and Sophie on the Coast. We just did, you know, 3 hours along LA and Malibu, et cetera. And that aired really well, and lots of people watched it and loved it. Listen, I'm lucky. I have a great relationship with I have one kid. I have a great relationship with my daughter. She's an amazing kid. She keeps me in line. It works both ways. And the book is called Sundays with Sophie. And basically, I wrote this book during the quarantine because, you know, like everybody else, I was cooking three meals a day. And this time I actually wrote stuff down. And it made me understand that, you know, Sundays with Sophie is basically, Sophie's basically filling in for everybody. It's basically, you know, you're cooking Sunday meals for your family and your friends around the table. And we did a lot more of that during the quarantine. And it was, you know, that was part of the silver lining of the whole thing, which is that I got to spend a lot more time with her. We get to have a lot more good, serious conversations around the table, and had a good time doing it as well. So basically this book is the product of that. And so it's basically Sunday dinners for your family. That's basically what it comes down to.
I'll find myself sometimes watching one of your shows or guy shows or something like that. And any cooking show, what is it about watching somebody make food that is so therapeutic, that's so calming, that's so, you would never, like, you just, I get lost in it. Like, it just, it's, and I'm not a foodie, you know what I mean? So I'm not one of these guys that by nature is, oh my gosh, but whenever I kind of come across it, I just go into a trance almost. This is your life. You've obviously thought about this, studied it, understand it better than anybody. Explain it to me.
So it's two things. It's the transformation of ingredients turning into something else right in front of your eyes. All of a sudden, you know, a chef does one, two, or three things in a saute pan or in the oven or on the grill or whatever it is, and it looks completely different than what it started out to be. That's number one. So it's transformation. And you're watching somebody's craft come alive. And then I think the second thing is that the light bulb goes off and you say, I can do that. And I want to do that. I'm going to do that. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it. But at that moment, that's what keeps you there.
It's interesting because I find that I can't think of anything else I watch where I drift. It's almost music in a strange way where you're watching, you're paying attention, but you kind of go, I'm just caught up in this thing. And you kind of, it's not a drama. I mean, yes, your shows are dramatic and they have beginning, middles, and ends, and they have arcs and things like that. But it's just the actual doing of it that is almost, there's this childlike connection that happens. You know, you have little kids now that's so interesting. You don't have a little one, but I mean, my friends have little ones. There's things on Instagram where it's basically, they'll have 20 million views of just somebody opening a box and taking toys out and putting them together. And children just stare at it dumbfoundedly. And it's the same math with adults and cooking.
Right. No, and also the competition shows, let's face it, if you like sports, you like these competition shows because that's what they are. They're basically cooking athleticism, you know? And also we hold the viewer because they want to see the result. They want to see who wins. They want to see who loses. They want to see what happens at the end. So I think that that also, in terms of the competition shows, that's what holds the viewer.
What's the craziest cooking show you've wanted to do and haven't been able to sell? I mean, the one that to you would be the Super Bowl of shows or off the charts and just for whatever reason haven't been able to make it happen yet.
Well, I really want to bring back, I want to do something called Food Network Famous, where we transform people into making them into famous chefs. You know, we had something called Next Food Network Star, and I've been pitching Food Network Famous for a long time, and so far I haven't been able to get them to buy into it. But you know, at some point we'll see.
So what else is coming up?
Well, I mean, we have the book. I'm really, you know, the show has just premiered. It's on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock, and you know, solid numbers the first week, so we're happy about that, and we just want it to grow. You know, it just makes a busy fall for me. I finally opened my first Italian restaurant. I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this, but I'm obsessed with Italy. I go there as often as I can. And I opened my first Italian restaurant in Vegas last year called Amalfi. And it's going gangbusters. And so I'm really thrilled about that. So I want to open maybe another Italian restaurant at some point.
Bobby, you're a class act. For anybody who doesn't know him, he's as nice as guys as he comes across on TV. The book is Sundays with Sophie, Flay Family Recipes for Any Day of the Week. And the new series was just premiered and is a hit right off the bat. Bobby's Triple Threat. It airs Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Food Network. My friend, always great talking to you, buddy.
My pleasure. Anytime, Donnie. Thank you so much for having me.